Yes.
Well, hey everybody, let's get started tonight. I think everybody knows where we're at tonight, but if not, we're starting in Genesis 11 tonight. The easy, simple title of this word of sermon would be the Tower of Babel. You could also say confused and scattered would be a good title for where we're at tonight. And I was thinking again as we enter this text, because the first nine verses are the Tower of Babel. Then we get into more genealogy stuff all the way through verse 32. But I got just thinking about in general, because we're about to hit a major turning point in the Genesis account where we've looked at these big overarching moments spanning large periods of time with some major events in the midst of those periods of time. Once we get past chapter 11 and we get to Abraham's life, it kind of slows down and we're zeroed in on Abraham and the birth of the nation of Israel and that kind of thing after we get beyond this chapter tonight. But it made me think about where we are or where we've been and where we are now. You know, the book of Genesis is quite literally the book of beginnings. I mean, that's Genesis beginnings, book of beginnings. And we've seen multiple monumental events in history covered up to this point. I just kind of thought through some of them as I was putting my notes together. We've, you know, looked at the creation. We've looked at the fall, first murder of Cain and his brother Abel, the generations leading from Adam all the way to Noah being 10 generations, wickedness of men that led to the worldwide flood, coming off the ark and the rainbow covenant, genealogies last week of the sons of Noah, Shem, Japheth, and Ham, and how those people groups spread out, and we can kind of trace our own genealogy somewhat, at least back to one of three, probably based on our own ancestry. Where these groups settled, where they, the nations that sprung from these groups of people, all that kind of thing. I also think it's pretty cool, just kind of as a side note, Claire's Bible class this year is more church history, so they're looking at the early church and the birth of the church and that kind of thing. But even in our world history class, I know there's a huge difference between that kind of school she's at and the public school system, but her world history class, where are y'all starting at? She said, we're starting in Genesis. And so that's where they start world history at, is Genesis, as is right. You may also remember that last week, as we looked at the genealogies from Genesis 10, we spoke of the fact that they were written from the perspective of post-scattering. And I spoke to the fact that we'll talk about the scattering in chapter 11, but it's written as if it had happened already when in regards to where these people groups settled at. We even have a hint of that. We're going to touch on him just a moment. Of course, Moses is writing about what had happened, so it was easy to write it in such a way. Now, tonight we look to that event, the event that caused the dispersion, that caused the scattering, that led to these people groups going to all these places. And we'll look at the how and the why that happened as we think about the Tower of Babel. And after we get past the Tower of Babel, like I said, in the first nine verses, then we really jump into the genealogy of Abraham. Then we launch off into his life, starting in chapter 12. Not just his life, but those, you know, the nation of Israel and those connected to his life. Through the line of Shem, through the line of Eber, to Abram. But before we get there, we have another extremely important text in front of us, and that's the text in front of us tonight. So let's read the account, the first nine verses, then we will explore these verses. So starting in chapter 11, verse 1. Now the whole earth had the same language and the same words. And it happened, as they journeyed east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. Then they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and they had tar for mortar. And they said, come, let us build for ourselves a city, a tower whose top will reach into heaven. And let us make for ourselves a name, lest we be scattered over the face of the whole earth. Then Yahweh came down to see the city and the tower which the men, sons of men had built. And Yahweh said, behold, they are one people, and they all have the same language. And this is what they have begun to do. So now nothing which they purpose to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down there and confuse their language, so they will not understand one another's language. So Yahweh scattered them from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there Yahweh confused the language of the whole earth, and from there Yahweh scattered them over the face of the whole earth. Let's pray. Father, we're thankful again to be gathered together to study your word. We're grateful for the preservation of history that you have given to us in your word, that we know is trustworthy and true. And it's the only accurate description of so many of these causative events that led us to where we are today. Lord, let us drink deep from your waters this evening. Let us heed your voice in your word. Help us to gain clearer understanding of what you would have us to know. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. I think I've shared with y'all before, there are so many, and we're going to actually touch on a lot of these in Genesis. We touched on some of them in Daniel. I've shared with y'all before, I've shared with many people before, that I wasn't raised in church, but I've always liked the concept of teaching these Sunday school lessons, if you will, that children learn at an early age, and they just hear kind of part of the story, only part of it sink in. Noah's Ark is an extremely strong example of that. A lot of things in Daniel is an example of that. Tower of Babel is another example of that, of something that, you know, you learn as a child, and it's kind of, okay, I got it, and file it away, but there's so much more going on here, really, that we need to explore as adults. But this text is a picture of depravity and rebellion. It's also what I find so interesting about this text is it's a precursor to two other empires and two other rulers yet to come. It's pointing, anyone will take a guess at who I'm thinking of is the next person it's pointing to in the next city or area I'm talking about? Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon. Then you got to jump way far in history after that one's the one we haven't seen yet. Antichrist and the New Babylon. This is precursors to both of those leaders, rulers, cities, areas also. We'll explore some of that here in just a bit. So last week we looked at how you could somewhat trace your heritage back to one of three sons of Noah as they spread out across the earth. But tonight we see the catalyst that led to that scattering, to the birth of multiple languages, multiple regions that are settled, eventually multiple nations and everything else. It starts right here. Now remember, what did God told them? Had God told them to go somewhere and build a city and set up all this stuff? No, that's the exact opposite of what he told them to do, right? If you look back at Genesis 9 and 1 when he came off the ark, and God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Then if you look down to verse 7 in that same chapter, as for you, be fruitful and multiply, swarm on the earth and multiply in it. They were to go out and populate outwardly. That's the exact opposite of what we're reading here. Now the text we're in is very straightforward and simple in the explanation of how and why the scattering of people happened, really, when you think about it, and the birthing of nations and languages. But in a single act, God did this. And although it was purposed and planned in God's providence, it happened as a judgment against rebellion and pride also. It is also likely, very likely, that this happened within 100 years of them coming off the ark. Think about that. Nimrod is what? No, it was his great-grandson, I believe. I'd have to go back and look at the genealogy. Grandson or great-grandson. He's the leader of this movement. But it was about 101 years after the flood. How long did we say Noah lived after the flood? 350 years. Noah still had 250 years left when the Tower of Babel happened. You might say, how are you coming to that? Well, we're going to get to that in just a second. We've got to kind of look ahead to get to that. Look back to 10:25 for a moment, though. Now, two sons were born to Eber, and we said that's where the name Hebrew comes from, right? The name of the one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided. And his brother's name was Jokvan. So it appears this division happened around the time of Peleg. Now, jump down in our chapter we're in tonight, in chapter 11, to 11, verse 10. When we get into genealogies, I'm going to point out a couple of things. These are generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old and became the father of Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. There's our first marker, right? 2 years after the flood, this first guy was born, Arphaxad. Look at verse 12. Arphaxad lived 35 years and became the father of Shelah. So we've got 2 plus 35. Now, this isn't intended to be a math class. I just want to back up my point of it being about 101 years. 35 plus 2 gets us to 37 years after the flood. Look at verse 14. And Shelah lived 30 years and became the father of Eber. Plus 30, 67 years. And Eber lived, verse 16. And Eber lived 34 years and became the father of Peleg. 67 plus 34 is 101 years. In the time of Peleg is when they were divided. So that's just a simple math of how we get to that thought process that it would have been around 100 years. It wasn't long after the flood, after they left the ark, Noah was still alive. Ham was still alive. Japheth was still alive. Shem was still alive. And we come to the Tower of Babel. I think in our mind's eye, or maybe in mine, maybe y'all didn't think this way, you think about it being a lot longer after the flood than 101 years. It does not take long for the depravity of man to just, once it starts rolling, and it's already rolling as soon as they walk off the ark, it never stopped rolling, to keep going. So within 101 years of the flood subsiding, roughly, give or take, this took place. Now to our verses. This section is simply constructed. If you were making an outline of the structure of this, I mean, verses 1 through 4 is man's plans. Verses 5 through 8 is God's response. Verse 9 is the summary. So let's look at verses 1 and 2. Now the whole earth had the same language and the same words, and it happened as they journeyed east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. Now where did they, I didn't bring a map tonight, but they come off of Ararat. Shinar is not actually due east, but it is east of where? Canaan. And it, I'll remember how I told you so many times when you talk about geographically, unless it lists where you're coming from, if it just throws out east, north, or south, it's coming from Israel. It's coming from Canaan. All directions come from Israel. Okay? When you read the Bible, just have that in your mind, unless it says specifically they left from this place to go west to that place or east. They're talking, the direction is given as Israel is the center of the world, which is Canaan to them. I mean, you see it throughout Scripture. So the English flows here one way, but the Hebrew is much, much deeper and richer here. When we read here the same language and the same words, some of your translations may say, or same vocabulary, in Hebrew what it says is they were of one lip. Very, practically speaking, of one lip. Now, when you think of the difference, brother, what is the difference between language and words? If somebody were to ask you that question, have you ever considered, is there a difference between language and words? The best way I think about it is like this. And we can take our own language, English. Dialect's one thing. We have the same language, English, as those in Great Britain do, those in Australia do, but yet there are words and things they use, whether they be euphemisms or whether they just be, you know, slang words or whatever, that are completely foreign to us. And even some of the same words they use differently, right? Even if you look just within Great Britain, if you go to Scotland or if you go over to Ireland, there's a lot of differences there too. Well, even in our own country, right? If you're from the north and you come, if you're from the west coast and you come to the south, that we're speaking the same language, but we're not always using the same words. Yeah. What's a pop?
Where's he at?
Yeah. 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 Soda. I mean, if you're in the South, everything's a Coke. Everything's a Coke in the South. Whether it's a Sprite or Dr. Pepper or a Coke, it's a Coke. What's that, Diane?
Drinks. Sometimes they call drinks.
Yeah. Cold drink. But see, we're using the same language. We're using the same language as they are in England and Ireland and Australia, but we're not using the same words all the time, and we have our dialects different, those kind of things. So that's my thought. So everything they were in complete understanding of everything that was said, language and words. There was no confusion at all when they were speaking to one another. These pre-scattering people spoke exactly alike. Exactly alike. Now, the idea of one original language isn't unique to biblical teaching. Other ancient histories share this also. The Sumerians do. There's multiple cultures I saw that do. And like I said already, they journeyed east coming from Ararat geographically, but again, coming from Canaan, it would be east. So they go to an area that even secular archaeologists and historians consider the cradle of civilization. They come to the Mesopotamian, about this fertile area in the Mesopotamian Valley. Shinar, they find this fertile plain in this area. Now we know, back in Genesis 10:10, let me read this about Nimrod. Verse 8, now Cush was the father of Nimrod, so this is of the line of Ham. He began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before Yahweh. Therefore, it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before Yahweh. And we talked last week about how that's not necessarily talking about a skilled deer hunter. That means he's a ruler, a warrior, a killer of men. He's a leader, and not in a kind way. The beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Akkad and Calna in the land of Shinar. So he's the one ruling this area. From there, from that land, he went out to Assyria and built Nineveh and Rehoboth-ir and Calah, and Rezin between Nineveh and Calah, that is the great city. We know their leader is Nimrod. And what did we say last week? Nimrod, that name Nimrod means. Malia, you want to tell us? Rebel. Rebel, she said, yeah. Rebel. What else is unique about this place? What two major rivers is it in the center of? Tigris and Euphrates. Now, yes, the earth had been drastically remade after the flood, but these two rivers should point us back to another pretty major place in the Bible, Eden. So, y'all don't have to turn there. I know it's only a couple of chapters back, but Genesis 2, 10 and 14. Doesn't it seem like that's ancient for like how long ago it was when we were talking about that? Genesis 2, 10 through 14. Now a river went out of Eden to water the garden, and from there it divided and became four rivers. The name of the first is Pishon. It is the one that went around the whole land of Havilah where there is gold. Now the gold of that land is good. The bedellium and the onyx stone are there. And the name of the second river is Gihon. It is the one that went around the whole land of Cush. And the name of the third river is Tigris. It is the one that went east of Asher. And the fourth river is the Euphrates. Yes, the earth had been changed and transformed. These rivers were there after the flood, and this is still in that same general area. Think about that for a minute. They're about to be thrown out again from the general area of where the original Garden of Eden was at. It's also this area from which what major world power would rise from? Babylon. Babylon is in this area. Yeah. First of all, together they settled there. What were they told to do? Spread out. What did they do? They went and settled in one area. Verse 3 and 4. Well, first of all, in verse 2, I'm sorry. Yeah, we are in 3 and 4. Then they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and they had tar and mortar. They said, come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top will reach into heaven. And let us make for ourselves a name, lest we be scattered over the face of the whole earth. You notice that I emphasize specifically, come, let us, in verse 3 and 4. This is man's plans. And there's a drip there of rebellion and a drip there of, let us do this thing that we want to do. Let us do it.
Is Noah still involved in this crowd? Because he would be considered to be a leader, I would think.
We don't know. If I'm wildly speculating here, I think once they got off the ark and things settled down, I think Noah probably just went into retirement, if you will. I'm speculating there. We just don't hear anything else about him. Yeah. And he would have stayed there close to where his farm.
Scattered out.
Yeah.
That's not close to
Aaron,
right?
No, it's not.
I guess he's old, too. I wouldn't want to find
him. Yeah. He still had 250 years of life left in him, though. But still, yes. Glance to verse 7 for just a moment again. We're going to come back to this, of course. This is the Lord speaking. Come, let us go down. So we're going to get to that in a minute, but there's it's interesting that he uses that same language. In the Hebrew, this language of man is clearly a view to autonomy and rebellion. It doesn't scream it out to us in English as well, but the way the Hebrew reads there is very clear that we're going to do this. We're going to do it our way. This is what we're going to do, and we all agree to do it our way. Now, the entirety of this account really points to the wickedness and rebellion of men, expanded in conjunction with other rebels working in one accord. Think about that for a moment, because this really shouldn't be a revelation to us. When we think about, I mean, the same is true today. Large groups of rebellious, unrepentant, unregenerate men, as they gather in a large group and they come up with something, this isn't any different than it is today. We talked about the mob mentality a lot when we were teaching through the book of Acts and how they would just, you know, pile on Paul or pile on whoever it might be and just everybody's going to join in because of the wickedness of man. Think about, I don't want to go tie all this into our current culture, but it's all connected. So, I mean, it's no reason not to, I guess. Where's our highest crime rates at?
Most populated cities.
And in the midst of those large populated cities, where is it then? Usually within their own people groups. There's a ton of crime within their own people groups. But that's where crime is at its highest. Now, we could easily, you know, the liberals would dismiss it and say, well, yeah, well, there's more people there, so that explains it. Yeah, it explains it, but not for the reason y'all think. It explains it because you get this large group of unregenerate people, largely, that are just rebellious. And the more you put in there together. What is the, have y'all ever read or heard, this is not a good analogy, but for some reason it popped in my head. If you take a jar full of ants and you leave them alone, they're not going to do anything to each other. But you shake that jar up, and it may even say red ants and black ants, I can't remember. You shake that jar up, what are they going to do? They're going to tear each other apart. Did y'all see the thing that happened in Alabama? It's all over the news today. That's the one thing I did see on the news, and it's because a guy at work told me about it 2 days ago. In Montgomery, Alabama, this kind of boat pulled up, and a black security guard, there's like a pontoon boat pulls up with a bunch of drunk rednecks on it. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat. That's what it was, a bunch of drunk rednecks. And this black security guard is like trying to tell them you can't park your boat there. I mean, shirts off, sunburnt, you know, throwing their bush lights over there. And they attacked this guy. And just jump on him and is beating him down. There's this other boat sitting there that was black and white folks all gathered together. And next thing you know, just a mad dash of a lot of black folks on this boat come flying off the boat to jump on these guys. It was a YouTube video that a guy at work told me about today. I didn't get a chance to watch it. And sure enough, it's on the national news earlier today. You get groups of people together that are rebellious at heart, it just multiplies as they're together. We see it all the time. And on top of that, what if you've got a powerful, charismatic leader that's leading this bunch? They have Nimrod. Makes me think of, in more recent history, less than 100 years ago, you had a charismatic leader that made people that had lived next door to another people group their whole lives, farmed with them, ate with them, broke bread with them, done everything with them. Germans and Jews that had grown up together and raised their children together, this charismatic leader united them in a way that they were willing to kill their neighbors. there's wickedness all around us, guys. This is a picture of it right here. You might think, well, what did they really do wrong? I mean, they're not doing the things I'm talking about, killing people and killing their neighbors and stuff. No, they were trying to take glory from God for themselves and even build a temple, and they were clearly going against what he had said, too.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, as he's speaking in verse 4, you know, let us build a tower whose top goes to heaven and make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad the face of the earth. That's exactly what God had told him to do, multiply the church.
Yeah. They didn't want to do what God told them to do.
I mean, that's, and God in 7 says, come let us.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Trinity.
So
his intentions was from first.
Yeah.
That's a lot like you're going to be talking to each other. That's a lot like Satan before I got cast out of heaven.
That too. Yeah. Which, I've said this before, all sin comes all the way back to pride. The one thing that this whole movement is pushing, pride, 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 is exactly what God says. And God says many, many times how much he hates pride. Many, he makes no bones about being hateful of pride. So practically speaking, they develop a way to make mud bricks. Let's look at the practical aspect of this. That area still has a lot of clay, still has tar pits. I mean, it would have been pretty easy for them to do this. And I'm assuming they'd have pieces of clay out in brick form and saw the sun hardened it and make it harden into a brick, and doesn't take... And again, we think these people, or not, I shouldn't say we, people think our ancestors going back this far were not very smart. They were a lot smarter than us because they didn't have as many generations of downward trend in the depravity of their minds. They were intelligent. They were very intelligent folks. So they probably seen it harden. We've seen that probably before. We've seen some kind of clay mud ball harden. So you just throw fire to it, heat it up quicker, and make it hard quicker. It doesn't take a lot of thinking to get there. We can see their purposes here, though, right? Build a city, build a tower, and the why, to make a name for ourselves. We want to be remembered. We want people to know who we are. It's a good time to revisit Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel 1:1-2. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of God, and he brought them to the land of where? Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. So that's speaking to the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar in Jerusalem. That's speaking to where they brought the stuff back to Shinar, which was where he worshipped his God at, where Nebuchadnezzar worshipped his God. Now, fast forward to Daniel 4. I'm not going to spend much time here. We covered this couple years ago. I'm sure everybody remembers it precisely as I do. Just kidding. Daniel 4:29-30. At the end of 12 months, he was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon, and the king answered and said, "Is this not Babylon the Great, which I myself have built as a royal house by the strength of my power and for the glory of my majesty?" What happens next? He gets thrown down, right? For quite a while, that's what happens right before we know that God turned him into basically a wild beast for a while. Let's go back to Genesis. Pride leads to destruction. Verse 3 says they were all in agreement. They said to one another, "We're going to make a permanent settlement here. We're going to build a tower here to reach heaven. A name for ourselves. Look at us." Now, when you get to verse 4, I think probably every single one of y'all's translations have something in italics in verse 4. When it says, "Come, let us build up for ourselves a city and a tower whose top right here will reach." Italics, it's bracketed or something. Does some of y'all doesn't have that? Okay.
Mine says is. The word is.
Okay. Okay. I know NASB and LSB, and I thought New King James, but maybe I'm wrong, has that in italics. The reason that's in italics is because it's kind of added for us. It wasn't in the original Hebrew. So if you read it without that in there, it would say, "And the tower whose top into heaven." It's the same thing. It's just to help us understand the flow of the language a little bit. Now, it's not. I don't think they're trying to think they're going to go to heaven and tear down the gates and storm heaven. they're just trying to reach that way the way they want to reach it, just defiantly. Make a name for ourselves kind of tells us the whole reason, though. Hebrew name, I thought this was very interesting. The Hebrew for name right here speaks of this: fame, recognition, or a perpetual memorial. So the word in Hebrew they use for name is exactly the way that we're talking about. They wanted to make sure their name would live forever based on their achievement and what they had done. Again, that's not unlike what we see in culture today. It's not an uncommon thought throughout history, even up to today. 2 Samuel, I found this verse. 2 Samuel 18:18 says this: "Now Absalom, in his lifetime, had taken and set up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's valley. For he said, 'I have no son to preserve my name.' So he named the pillar after his own name, and it is called Absalom's Monument to this day." I don't know what I'm going to leave behind, so I'm going to build something, and people will know I built it or name it after me. Kind of makes you think about all these things that are named after people, right? Now, a lot of times it's after they're dead and gone, and we name it as an honor to them. This is not talking about that. This is talking about somebody who wants you to put my name on this thing. Lastly, they thought there was strength in numbers, did they not? This would prevent people from leaving. It would give them confidence, but also it was probably a direct reflection of their leader, Nimrod. You consolidate power. Now, who were they? I mean, I read something MacArthur said about this. He said, they built this tower. People have tried to dismiss what the tower was for. It's clear to the heavens. But anyway, it's not, if they were building a watchtower or a guard tower, that's different, right? You don't have to build this big, but there would be no need for a watchtower or guard tower at this point, this early on. And who was it be against? Yeah.
So when I was going to Sunday school many years ago, I was under the impression that they built it because of the flood. So that if it flooded again, they can get above the waters.
That's actually, this story is told in other cultures. And that's one of the reasons that the other cultures are saying that that's what they think they built it for. You know how we had talked about how the flood was in different cultures? Well, there's also battle or tower stories, and they would bring that idea into it, even though it's not in scripture. So you probably got it from some cult.
Tell them what you really think, Diane.
Your cult leader.
That's an interesting concept, though, because for those who would have been within 100 years of the flood and had firsthand people, able to talk to people with firsthand experience, they also would have had firsthand experience of what God said about his promise not to ever do it again, too. Unless
practical either. I mean, because all the mountains were covered, you know what I mean? They're not building anything.
Well, if it says they were trying to build it to the heavens, it may indicate they were trying to build it above the highest mountains. But the other thing, if there was some thought about that, it may be in their mind that they understood how wicked they were and that if God brought it again, but again, he could have raised it up as high as he wanted to raise the water up too. Interesting. I've never heard that. I can see where it could come from other cultures and stuff though, very easily.
Although you could build it in the river valley if you thought you were trying to get it.
No, it's not the best place to build it at either, but between two major rivers. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you're the king or the leader, who wants to be in the high spot?
Yeah. And be able to see it from a long ways off when you're coming. That makes me think about what we'll get to when we get to the next part of our Israel trip. And I won't give away all of it. By the way, we're going to split that one up because it was too long last time. We're going to split it up, Jerusalem. But the Temple Mount, what we see now, the Golden Dome up there that's over where Abraham took Isaac to be sacrificed, that's massive looking. From everywhere in Jerusalem, you can kind of see that thing. They took a scale, and I'll show you all a picture of that and the actual size of what the real temple was. It's like, what, a sixth of the size of what the temple was? Imagine seeing that gleaming white temple coming in from anywhere. But that was a monument to God, not man. But anyway.
Think about what you said. I mean, obviously, you know, they're in rebellion. I mean, that would be like rebelling against the flood, too, in a sense, though, if that was the case. You know, like, well, won't do that to us again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it would make sense.
It's
another
problem. Yes. Yeah. And I think it was, I don't know how to say this gent nice. So if that was their plan, then God was not going to have any of that.
Yeah, regardless of whatever their plan was for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
7 days.
Well, let's go ahead and see what God has to say about this. Verse 5. Then Yahweh came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. Now, don't let any of that, what I just read to you, trip you up in any way, shape, or form. I don't think any of y'all would. We've talked about this kind of stuff before. We see two things at work here. One is anthropomorphic language. God using language that we can kind of understand in human terms of him coming down. He didn't have to learn anything. He didn't have to. He knew exactly what was going on, right? He knew what was going on before they ever cast their first brick into the brick oven. It also reflects something that I read from a German Old Testament scholar that I've never read before, but I heard this quote through another place that I was reading at one time, and I dug it all up to find it, and I think this is very insightful. The guy, the scholar's name, Otto Proschke. I don't see it ringing any bell for anybody. He makes this quote about this verse. Yahweh must draw near, not because he is nearsighted, but because he dwells at such a tremendous height and their work is so tiny. God's movement must therefore be understood as a remarkable satire of man's doing. I like that.
Also, they had to live out the rebellion long enough for them to get the point that it was something to punish, too. If they just kind of sketched it out, it wouldn't have been as impressive.
Yeah, and all the pictures that man has made of it already show it. I mean, I Googled some pictures of it to put whenever we upload the sermon later tonight, and all of them already show it way up there. But even if it was way up there, it's insignificant in who Creator God is.
He
right.
He usually kind of waits to give his lessons until
you're right.
You can really get the point of it.
Yeah.
Have a lot of sweat and labor.
Yeah.
That too.
So consider the situation again. City, so they got a central location. A tower, which could point to the religion or the rebellion, however you look at it. And a name, which leads to autonomy and power. Same as Nebuchadnezzar, right? Same for the Antichrist to come, right? When it'll be a one-world religion and one-world government. And I mean, we're at the point now, I heard that we're down to a fraction of the amount of world languages that we once had, and they're dying out daily. We're getting closer and closer and closer. There was, I didn't write it down, but it was like 35% of the languages spoken in the world today are not being taught to children anymore. So they're a generation or two away from like 35% of the languages that are still spoken not existing anymore.
Wow.
And almost half of the world's populations speak like four languages. English, Spanish, probably Mandarin. I don't know what the fourth one would be. I didn't hear them list them, but those three alone would take up a huge part of the population, right? Just English, Spanish, and Mandarin Chinese, because there are so many Chinese. Verse 6, and Yahweh said, behold, they are one people, and they all have the same language, and this is what they have begun to do, so now nothing which they're supposed to do will be impossible for them. Again, that's kind of a tongue-in-cheek statement there, but then again, he's also saying when you get a group of people that are all of one mind and one mindset, you can do a lot if you have a whole, if you have everybody pulling on the same end of the rope. They're all of one accord. Wickedness can and does abound. There's no gates on how far they will go unless God himself puts the gates there. I've heard, a couple of y'all probably heard this too, Paul Washer one time speaking about Hitler again. And he said, people talk about, you know, the special hell for Hitler and how awful Hitler was. And he said, listen, every human being on the face of the earth has the capacity to be as evil as Hitler was. You don't want to hear that, but it's true. He said, why didn't Hitler go any further than he did? He wanted to. At a point, God slams the door on it. Now, he used a lot of men and women to do that. But at a point, no further.
There's enough supernatural stuff that went on in the war, too. You know,
yeah, a ton of it.
So that was obviously God's...
On both sides. Some evil supernatural things and some... Yeah, there's some... I don't encourage you to go watch any speeches from Adolf Hitler, but some of them, you don't have to, you can turn the volume off and watch some things and you see it looks demonic, some of his gestures and his eyes and stuff like that. But our languages are confused, so you wouldn't understand him anyway unless you speak German.
So how close is the Tower of Babel to Babylon, like Nebuchadnezzar was?
Timeline-wise?
I'm talking geography. You don't know.
One end or the other, I believe, of the valley.
Well, didn't they... in Iraq
they were uncovering the city, or no, they was building a new Babylon.
Well, Iraq is largely considered Babylon, where about Babylon will be, I think, the future Babylon.
You know, Saddam Hussein had started rebuilding, but whether it was on the original site or
Yeah, I mean, it's not
artifacts.
Yeah, it's right there at the northern border. If I'm thinking about the map correctly, anyway.
I guess they're talking Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah, and it really speaks of Shinar, however you want to say it. But there is a direct connection there. I would have to look that up, lay the map right over it, Diane. But it's right. That's right in northern Iraq area. I mean, Iraq's a huge country. You don't really want to go over there and tour.
I'm totally joking.
Oh, okay. Verse 7. Come, let us. Does anybody have us there capitalized or not capitalized?
Capital.
Okay. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language so that they will not understand one another's language.
Does it sound like God went down part of them and then he went back and told the rest of many to come?
I don't think that. No. I don't think they're all of one mind. He didn't have to go tell them something they didn't know either, though. I think what we really see here is some sarcasm and the Trinitarian truth at the same time of him using their own language against them, really. Of him saying what they said, he's saying, we're all of one accord, we're all of one mind because we are the sovereign triune Godhead. And we're going to come down.
One has to wonder if the original language got left or if it all disappeared and everything was new.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Just one has to wonder. That's as far as
yeah. Now that's a good question. Y'all tracking what she was saying there? Did that language last?
I mean, they started with a language from, you know, I mean, Adam and Eve could talk, okay?
Yeah.
And that apparently was the common language. And then when he confused them, was that one left in somebody's head? You know. I mean, maybe Noah back in Mount Ararat, he maybe remembered the old language or something.
Well, he would have been, if they scattered and confused all the languages, then he'd have had some language, I don't know if it had been the same one or not.
I mean, if he wasn't right, if everybody wasn't there and Shinar doing it together, we kind of decided they might not all be there yet.
No, I don't think every single person on the earth was there, but I think the majority of them were.
The outliers could have kept the old language, maybe. But it doesn't matter.
It's all speculative, yeah.
It's just moving on.
Confuse their language. A quick way to stop progress immediately, right? If all of a sudden you can't communicate anymore, the brakes are, you pull the emergency brake on the whole thing. Talk about the confusion this causes, though. I mean, we're talking. It's the exact opposite as what we say the gift of tongues at Pentecost, really. It's the exact opposite. They're talking, they're communicating, they're doing whatever, and we may all be given a different language and none of us can understand what the other one's saying.
What if they split families and everything in different languages?
Well, that's the thing. I think the languages, because of how they, where they moved to, the families, Ham, Japheth, and all them, I think it probably was kind of distinctive with certain family groups. Mm-hmm. That's how they all went to certain areas together.
Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, you're talking to somebody and all of a sudden you're still speaking, but they have no clue what you're saying anymore. Because you're speaking a whole different language. Who are you going to seek out then? You're going to seek out the other people that can understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And vice versa, that you can understand. Immediate chaos, immediate confusion. Just like that, the power and influence is shattered. Just like that. Verse 8. Now here's another question. Maybe I'll ask this one before Diane does. Verse 8. So Yahweh scattered them from over, scattered them from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. Obviously, they stopped building the city. He scattered them from there. How? And was it immediate? Are we talking about like a Philip thing of just scattered them? I mean, you close your blink and then you're in, you know, north of Ararat now. I told you I was going to ask a question first. Now, I didn't mean to pick on Diane, but I actually had the question here in my notes of how. So,
well, to me, common nature, like when we travel We used to sleep with that a lot. You get in a different country and get in a section that everybody's talking, and you don't understand nothing except when they say Americana. You look around, you're the only whites around. Tell us, we got to go.
Yeah, no.
Go somewhere, get in the car, and move, you know, go somewhere else. So, I mean, I can see the family saying, hey, we don't understand. You know, they make absolute sense. So let's head west, or let's head east, or
right.
North, or.
Yeah, I think that's there's kind of a fear that probably yeah, well,
they're afraid, and because I don't understand you, I don't know what your intentions are towards
yeah.
me.
We're out
here.
Yeah.
And so I think there's
so we don't think it was a Philip thing where
yeah,
one second here, one second he's there. So more of a migration.
Maybe,
yeah.
But I don't.
I don't have the answer to this. I mean, Bible doesn't tell us, right? Not directly. Either way, it doesn't really matter because either way you look at it, they moved away, or they were moved away. It happened.
And God did it
either way.
Yeah.
He either caused it to happen. So in his providence, he either caused it to happen, or he made it happen immediately. Kind of goes back to the, similar to what Tony did the devotional on that time, right, about in God's providence, things working themselves out, or a miracle of something happened. And if God did it immediately, like he did Philip, that's no small feat for God anyway, right? So there's no reason he couldn't have done it that way. There's also no reason he didn't do it where they migrated away from there.
Yeah, I think something that magical would have maybe been mentioned, you know. And also, they had to live with the consequences of the punishment. And so I think the idea of the confusion and the struggle was part of it. They were instantly in a new place altogether.
Too easy.
That's kind of too easy.
Yeah.
That's kind of what
that's a good
I
point.
Would say.
That's a good point. As they went, though, they're still what? They're still carrying that sin with them. They're still carrying that rebellion with them. I mean, they're toting all that with them. They just couldn't all work together anymore. They couldn't be the same mindset, the same accord. And also, when that happens, what else? You get tribalism starting to build in then, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what she was saying.
Quickly. Really quickly, that builds up. Yeah, you figure, you like Kelly was saying, the fear of, I don't know if they're, are they after get me now? We were buddies yesterday.
Well, it looks like Nimrod reestablished kingdom from verse 10 to verse 11. So he probably was still understood to be.
But we don't know at what point the tower was being built and when, how much he had grown the empire, and then, and like you said, how long it took to build this tower, too.
It says, though, from that land he went to Assyria and built these other cities.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like there was a transition there, and he probably would be somebody that everybody still would recognize as you don't mess with.
That and those that were they were the same tongue. They're gonna. Yeah. He's still a leader and yeah. a follower, and they're still gonna follow him.
So he didn't lose his mighty hundredness. He just went someplace else and started over. Look at it.
So look at verse 9, kind of the recap. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there Yahweh confused the language of the whole earth, and from there Yahweh scattered them over the face of the whole earth. Babel is a play on words with the Hebrew word, and it means confused. That's actually an app to help you learn another language, too, right? It's Babel.
And also in English, it sounds babbling is sort of like the same thing.
Yeah, it's not exactly an onomatopoeia, but it's similar. Well, there's another word for something that's similar. Remember, they hoped to make a name for themselves, right? Did they make a name for themselves? They kind of did, just not the way they planned. They became infamous, right? Not famous, they become infamous.
We're talking about them now.
We're talking about them now. Now, before we close, Antichrist will desire some of these same things. And he'll accomplish a lot of these same things. He'll have a measure of success right until Jesus returns and destroys him and his works. So as we close, let us look at a time when this is actually going to come to fruition, though. When King Jesus comes. Right? Isaiah 2, 1 through 4. The word which Isaiah, the son of Amoz, beheld concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now it will be that in the last days the mountain of the house of Yahweh will be established as the head of the mountains, and will be lifted up among the hill, above the hills, and all the nations will stream to it. And many peoples will come and say, come, let us go to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may instruct us from his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. For from Zion the law will go forth, and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. And he will judge between the nations and will render decisions for many peoples. And they will hammer their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift up sword against nation, and never again will they learn war. The only way that is consolidated is when we have the perfect, true king, the Lord Jesus, with his earthly kingdom established. And the new Jerusalem that we read about in Revelation comes down. Thoughts?
Yeah, how'd they get to America?
You should have been here last week.
Alaska.
Yeah, that's what we think. I mean, we're...
They paddled across.
Well, there'd have been a land bridge there then.
Was there one then?
Possibly.
And then you got some saying the Indians weren't the first things.
Yeah.
So it gets interesting.
If you'd have been here last week, we talked about... What tribe? Do you remember what tribe that was we said that would have come from? Tribe of Japheth, probably.
Yeah.
Japheth was the tribe that went, Russia. Yeah, and then would have probably crossed over. But, I mean, they could have very easily had some kind of little boats. I mean, you hit to the, the Aleutian Islands there, and there are places there on those Aleutian. There's one island there, two islands there. I've looked at before, very interesting. They're just several hundred yards away from each other. One of them's Russia, one of them's Alaska.
It's almost like they're split.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And it's weird. I mean, during the Cold War, they could, like relatives on different islands, and certain times of the year you can, in certain places you could actually see people here and there, and but you couldn't travel between the two of them. Interesting. But yeah, that the thought is Japheth, that tribe would have went North America all the way down into South America.
There easily could have been a land bridge, and then an earthquake did something, so it's more nowadays it's split apart. And they have earthquakes up in that area a lot, so it could have been different topography.
Global warming.
Yeah. Well, there's that. Icebergs had melted yet,
and
so there was more land.
Any other thoughts, guys?
Well, you know what? That's the point that Kelly and I were talking about. Nimrod was a mighty warrior for his people. And if I had certain languages that I couldn't understand what he was saying, I would definitely want to, because, I mean, you know, he's already a conqueror. So, I mean, that would scatter.
Yeah, you want to get the heck away.
It's like Kelly was saying, you know, is he planning, you know, we don't know nothing.
You can't follow his rules anymore if you don't know what he's telling you to do.
Yeah.
You can get as far away as you can.
Yeah. So that was kind of pretty.
Yeah. Yep. Good thoughts. Like I said, we don't know for sure. We always have what the text tells us, but there's a pretty good case to be made, I think, of it being more migratory. Any other thoughts?
Does the Bible say anything else about Nimrod after this?
I don't think he's mentioned again.
Yeah, he was kind of leader of the building the tower and all that.
Yeah, I can't think of any other biblical reference to him. Anybody else?
So you kind of get the feeling that everyone left. They kind of left that town.
Well, if you go with what Diane's saying and people kind of them settling other places, perhaps they did.
I know when me and Kelly try to do a project, sometimes I don't understand what she's saying.
Do you leave and go as far away as you can?
Look at me and say, "What are you saying?"
I have a little bit of that with Malia from time to time.
I don't understand.
So then I walk away and do it anyways. It's gonna come back.
Oh yeah. It's because she's Canadian. It's hard to understand.